And now,
the definition.
Hello, family. Wanted to record this to be placed at the beginning of Class War Battlefield podcast. Kind of a prophecy looking forward. Start off by saying I'm one of the people who believes in the sanctity of human life and the unanimity of all human life. I had to confront a couple of things recently after Donald Trump was elected. The first bit that I had to confront, reality really, was people are being dishonest about those who are really in danger by this new fascism and by the rise of the alt-right. They're dishonest because they overemphasize, some of the victims while de-emphasizing others. It is undeniable that there will not be an increase in domestic violence. There always is. When you get economic troubles, parents fight more. And both men and women strike their partners more. Oftentimes, that's not something that this society wants to face. But women are as violent as men when it comes to domestic violence. And Lord knows I've seen it. Being at the bottom of the society, you see it. In fact, I've seen more often than not, at least out in the streets. And I ain't talking black people here. I'm talking white folks. I've seen white women beat up on their men quicker than I've seen black women beat up on their men. And it's something that people don't talk about. But with that being said, murder rates among women will go up. But if we were to really swing into deep fascism, the increase in murder of women, and I'm talking mostly white women now, because when you're talking about racism, you're not talking about a separation of male and female. Racism is a black male and female problem. So when you're talking about women, the reality is what they're really talking about is white women. The increase in murders of white women, it's only going to take up 1 or 2%. This is bad, yes. But it's only going to take up 1 or 2%. Now, looking at the history of this country, the people who are going to have the worst problems are going to be people with the darkest skin and people who do not adhere to cultural standards. And by that, I do mean people who decide to wear different clothing. So you would think Muslims. I found out an interesting statistic. Nearly one half of all practicing Muslims in this country are not Arab. They are black American. They are people born over here. And they have black skin. This actually makes a lot of sense because last year, a couple of years ago, actually, Fox News was pushing hard, actually, for much of the last 8 years. Fox News has been pushing hard the message that Muslims, Islamic preachers, were converting people in jail. And I knew when they said people in jail, I knew they weren't talking about Arabs. I knew they weren't talking about Mexicans. I knew they were talking about black people. Anytime when they talk about criminals, they're usually talking about black people. So that's going to infect, that's going to affect them, excuse me. That's a double handicap there. They're black and they're Muslim. Now, I don't want to exclude the Mexicanos, the Puerto Ricans, my brothers and sisters from south of the border. I don't want to exclude you, because you're going to catch hell too. I mean, Donald Trump already said that he's coming for you. But now I pose a question to you as I pose to the Arabs. Quickly. Whose side are you on? See, many Mexicans and some even Puerto Ricans like to snuff their nose down at black folks. You look at us the same goddamn way these white racists do. As if there's a problem with us. Not all of you, but there's enough of you. And you look at us like we have a problem. Like we can't get it right. Well, now many of you are about to see why we haven't been able to get it right. They've kept us moving. And too many of you have no clue about that. You ain't never had a clue about it. But now you're about to see. The sad part about it is it didn't even have to be this way. In the 60s, Malcolm, and then Martin, finally, but Malcolm was making outreaches to all these different groups, to the Arab Muslim population, to the Mexicans, the Chicanos, the Puerto Ricans, the Honduras, all of you. He's trying to pull you all in. Making you see that our struggle here was your struggle there. I love Hugo Chavez for that. Because he said, I am unashamedly African. And we need to be standing with our African brothers and sisters. He said that. He realized that the blood of slaves coursed through his veins. And that the blood of the indigenous coursed through his veins. And he said that made him a brother on two continents. Three, actually, because North American. But he claimed that. And many of you don't want to claim it. You're embarrassed by the darker skinned cousins that you have. Thought you were becoming white. Many of you thought you were becoming white. And so you can flick your nose because you can now pass. You got an answer for that now. Your ancestors are looking at you and saying, now what? The devils you have followed now lead you to hell. And the people who you have been chastising and spitting at are the only ones who are brave enough to come down there and get you. Are you going to be humble enough to go to those people and say, we need your help, and then remain with those people once when the fight is over? So that's the question of the hour. I often don't like to speak about some of these things, but a friend of mine made a great point to me, and I can't deny it. It's a great point. It's true. For much of the past 30 years, Arabs, Indians, meaning Indians from India, and I want my Native American family to know I ain't forgot you either. You're going to suffer just like us. But I consider you one of us. That's when I talk about black people, you with us. You with us. But he said that Indians and Arabs in many of the big cities, they control, and of course some Latinos do too, but they control the corner stores. They control all of the small rest areas where black people have to frequent to buy groceries and what have you. And for that 30 years, these people have been treating the black population around them like dirt. He told me this. He would know. He's traveled to these places. I've heard it before anyway. But he talked about this. And he said, you know, you're going to think it's wrong, but I don't give a damn if they're getting beat up now. I don't. He said, I don't. He's an older guy. He goes, I've been into these cities, into these places. I've seen how they treat us. I don't care. I guess it's about time, actually, that now they're catching hell. See, because when we were catching hell, they were blaming it on us. But now that they're catching hell, they want to walk and march and act like they're one of us now. Oh, well, we've always been what you know. You know, well, he made a suggestion. He said, well, why don't we wait 10 years? Why don't we wait 10 years before we really partner with these people? We wait 10 years and let them get their brains beat out a little bit while we dust ourselves off and stand up straighter, and then we'll worry about them. Seems cold, don't it? Not only seems cold, that's inhumane. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. I don't look at it as cold or inhumane. Why? Because he's right. He's right. Where the Arabs been for the last 30 years? Where they been? Huh? We cash monkeys to them a lot of the times. They ain't doing nothing really for the community. Now since 9/11, though, they've been under the gun, and suddenly they want to fuss. Many of our Latino family, too, they the same thing. Same thing. There's choices that got to be made now. And I ain't talking about strategic allyships. I'm talking about real hard choices. Who you gonna be with? You gonna be with the devil over there? Are you gonna come back home to your ancestors? Because let me tell you what, family. To them groups that I just mentioned, you disrespect your ancestry one more time and watch what happens. Because they ain't playing anymore. The ancestral realm is on fire these days. And they're sick of us playing around. The world is a mess. Because we have all decided to confuse our loyalties. That must end.
Class war, class war, class war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
My attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no wars, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is your brother Ryan Merdis. Welcome to another episode of the Class War Battlefield Podcast. It's literally taken me almost 2 weeks to fully wrap my head around Donald Trump as president-elect. 2 weeks. Part of it came from the fact that I had allowed myself to be soothed into false assurances by a friend who kept telling me, Hillary got it in the bag. Sad part about this is, last year, I was listening to a podcast which, truthfully, and I'm not ashamed to actually admit this, it's not friendly to white people. It is a black podcast, unapologetically black podcast, called The Context of White Supremacy. And a familiar guest on that show, one Dr. Francis Cresswellsey, who passed away within a couple of months of the episode that I'm talking about. She made a prediction. She said Donald Trump would be the next president of the United States. She said, I look at Donald Trump and I say, here's your next president of the United States. And this woman who was a third generation doctor, psychologist, I believe, made this prediction, and I listened because her works have had a profound impact on me. She's very insightful, very insightful. And so I saw this, what she was talking about, and I was reading the newspaper, and I was taking in information. And I was watching, particularly as the debates came on. And I was watching how my friends responded to Donald Trump. And I was watching how my friends responded to the rest of the candidates. And I was watching how the people around me, people who I didn't know, were acting. And prior to the actual debates, when, you know, we started getting into the process, I had observed that white people looked afraid. White people looked afraid. I observed that. I said, they look afraid. As if they know something. Now, why they looked afraid, I'm not going to get into that because I'm not really sure. Well, I wasn't sure at the time. And, but Donald Trump seemed to breathe something into them. Moreover, as time progressed, and I was watching, and I was listening, and I was reading, I noted that there is this uninterrupted chorus against Hillary Clinton. People don't like to admit it, but there was. And people have said, oh, well, that's because, you know, and neoliberal this, neoliberal that. That's because people didn't find her trustworthy and all this other stuff. Okay. That's fine. Most of the presidents aren't found trustworthy. George W. Bush wasn't trustworthy. He lied nearly on a daily basis. But what, he was folksy? So people like... Either way. On supposed progressive stations, the nail-pounding sounds against Hillary Clinton was deafening. People did not warm up to her. They didn't like her. They did not like her. And I was shocked by that. There are things, obviously, that Clinton had said in the past which I didn't like. There were things that Clinton the first did that I did not agree with. But the one thing that I found ironic that nobody talked about with the Clintons and that nobody wanted to even tackle when it came to the Clintons was the fact that Bill Clinton was the first president in decades to leave office with a surplus. Not a small, oh well, $800 million surplus, but a trillion plus dollar surplus. The surplus plan that they had implemented was so good that by 2008, the United States would have been completely out of debt. I want you to think about where our debt is now. But nobody wanted to talk about this. Everybody was hitting their Clinton Foundation, this Clinton Foundation, that. You know, the majority of people, harped on the Clinton stuff. And while they were harping on the Clinton stuff, they didn't take 1 second to look and say, where are we channeling this energy into then? Because the progressives who were beating up Hillary Clinton were not at the same time talking up Jill Stein or some other left group. And I think there's a good reason for that. And I don't, actually, it's not a good reason, but it's a reason. I think there's a reason for that. I think because, as I have said many times before, liberals and progressives are nothing but conservatives with a smile. That's what they are. That as long as they got their money and they don't have to do much to maintain their hold onto that money, as long as they don't have to interrupt their lifestyle, they're happy. And by definition, that makes them conservative. In fact, I looked up the word liberal, and outside of all this philosophical nonsense, which doesn't appear, actually. See, you thought I was going to go there. No, actually, when I looked up liberal, and I'm talking about in older dictionaries, I'm not talking about the Orwellian ones that exist today. When they used to, I go back to when they used to actually tell you what the things were. And what I found was, I think it was the Samuel Johnson dictionary. Kind of an obscure dictionary. But I found it on archive.com. And it defined liberalism as simply just not mean. Or not being mean. They still have wealth. They still have class. They still have status. They're just not mean about it. They don't lord it over people. Which is different because the conservatives are just, hey, I got it and this is how I'm going to keep it. Boom. This is why so many liberals, quote, Democrats, could suddenly turn Republican overnight or vice versa. Because the only thing that they are really honestly voting for is their wealth. It's not about a better society or anything like that. It's their wealth. That's all they've ever voted for. But I'm off track. So these people were hitting Clinton every single day. I'm not talking just a couple of sites. I'm talking about, man, dozens, hundreds of videos being published out of nowhere on the internet suddenly. And nobody asked where these videos were coming from. They just started appearing. I didn't ask either. It wasn't until after the election when I said, wait a minute, there's some things that don't make sense here. Where were all of these, and some of these videos, where were all of these videos coming from is what I meant to say. But some of these videos were well done. So they weren't amateurs putting them together. They were videos which included archival footage, which a person would have the know-how, one, to go and get, and two, where to find it, and how to find it, and then the money to actually get it, which nobody's thinking about that. And then you had just tons of, quote, progressive and liberal talk shows just hammering Hillary Clinton. And again, I say pure and simple, nobody wanted to talk about the fact that there was actually a surplus when Clinton left office. Not only was there a surplus when Clinton left office, but the United States was on track to be completely out of debt. And I want you to consider that, because all of these right-wingers out here yelling about the Federal Reserve, all of them, you notice I said right-wingers. Why? Because to a T, they vote for Tea Partiers. And in this election, most of them were talking libertarian talk. And they vote for Republicans. And they cannot point to a single one of their beloved Republicans who could say that. Oh, well, he had a Republican Congress. Whoop-dee-doo. So didn't George W. Bush. Don't make no difference. He got it done. Granted, he did it on the backs of black people, which I do not like. But it was there. This is not a pity party, though. This isn't why I'm doing this podcast. And I know the last 12 minutes just made you think otherwise. But it's not. Because I want you all to understand something. There was a bigger game going on. And the majority of us had no clue that we were being played. We didn't. There is a bigger game going on. And we were actually played. So it wasn't Hillary Clinton. This is what most of the people don't get. See, everyone's into conspiracies today. Everyone's into conspiracies today. But very freaking few people understand the nature of large conspiracies. I don't understand them 100%. But I know this. The elite, which everyone calls the elite, I'll use that term because you all know, they're not really elite. They're just in power. But they're not a monolithic group. Meaning, They don't have one mind. Often, they fight each other. When you think about JFK's assassination, when you think about his murder, everyone just automatically says, oh my God, it was the government who killed him. It wasn't the government who killed JFK. Well, the military had something to do with it. You're looking at the shadow and believing that's the person. No. JFK was killed by a rival faction in the upper class. Get that through your minds. This is a big chess game. This whole country, this world, these are multiple chess games going on simultaneously. Hillary Clinton was a chosen candidate for a certain group of people, of the quote, electorate, which when you hear the word electorate, you better not think for a moment that they're talking about the average voter. When they talk about voters, they say voters. When they're talking about the electorate, they're talking about the people who are behind the scenes, who are pulling the strings to actually elect and select the people who you are voting for. Get that through your head. And what you saw was all of these people saying they were going to go for Hillary Clinton. All of these Republicans and conservatives saying they were going to go for Hillary Clinton. And you know what happened the night of the election? You know why it took her so long to come out and give her concession speech? Everyone's like, oh, she was crying in her oatmeal. She was this and she was that. The problem with people with big egos is they just don't understand what's actually happening in front of them until that energy wears off and they find themselves in an incredibly large spider's den. What the heck happened was this. One, they've been telling you for the last year and a half that the election was going to be rigged. Donald Trump told you that. And he was right. The problem is, it wasn't rigged for Hillary Clinton. It was rigged for him. They've been telling you for the last 3 years that it was likely that this was going to be one of the most hacktacular elections ever. Meaning what? That hackers were going to be able to get into the computers and do their worst. Am I saying that the election was stolen? I don't have evidence to be able to conclude that, but I can tell you this. The reason Hillary Clinton did not come out and give her concession speech was because the returns that she was looking at was different than the returns that were being broadcasted on the television screen, and she was giving, let's say that's not true. Let's say she was just watching the television screens and, you know, things were where they were. Fine. She was on the phone calling people. Those people who had told her that they were going to support her, and she was saying, what the hell happened? And they were saying, well, Hillary, we reassess the situation and think that Donald Trump's going to be the best candidate. And boom, he was. That's what the elite wanted. They wanted Donald Trump. Now, I said we had gotten played. Let me elaborate on that a little bit. I watched a piece back in the summer, I think it was on, I think it was on CNN. And actually, no. I'm doing this from memory. I was reading an article, I think it was in August, about Donald Trump and how he captured the Republican nominee. and how this man basically had no media budget. I mean, he had a hell of a internet game. The man was running miles around Hillary Clinton on the internet. But when it came to, quote, traditional media, he had basically no budget. Why? He didn't need it. He didn't need it. He was getting more coverage via the media than Hillary Clinton, and she was paying for it. What does that have to do with us being played? Well, what that has to do with us being played is they projected an image of this man day and night, which was in contrast to Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was running the traditional campaign. She was the traditional candidate. She wasn't breaking any new molds, and that's what her narrative became. Narrative is very important in this society. Narratives most do not actually exist. They are created. They are spun. They are projected. But they don't actually exist because they blind people to the realities. They're illusions. They're smoke. She was the traditional candidate, and people didn't want the traditional candidate, supposedly. Let's say the exit results were real. Supposedly. They didn't want the traditional candidate. Actually, what they didn't want was a woman in the office. But I think that's white folks' problem. That's not black folks' problem. That's white folks' problem. White people said they ain't want a woman in office. Now, Donald Trump, on the other hand, when he was projected as this controversial figure, this man who offended everyone from women to gays to blacks to Hispanics. He was this cowboy shooting from the hip, cowboy shooting from the hip. Cowboy shooting from the hip. Yeah, by the way, I didn't put that on repeat. That's my voice, actually. The reason why I said it like that is because that should sound familiar to anybody over the age of 30. Who was the new cowboy shooting from the hip in the year 2000? Wasn't that George W. Bush? So he was the new cowboy shooting from the hip. And that's how they projected him. That was the narrative of him. He upset everybody because he refused to be PC. And Clinton ran as a PC candidate. I actually should have seen this coming. Why? Other than the fact that Francis Cresswell seemed predicted it, South Park from the previous year predicted it, basically. When Garrison ran for president as a Trump-like character and stunned people because he was winning. He was winning support wherever he went because he was the anti-PC candidate. And that underscores another reality. When I say we got played, ladies and gentlemen, there was already a projection in the media that the most controversial figure was going to win. Everyone, of course, has heard that The Simpsons predicted it in the year 2000, but very few people know that a year ago, The Simpsons put out a little promo video which spoofed the 3 a.m. Video that Clinton released in 2008 and asked the question, who do you want in the White House? And there was Clinton, and there was Trump. Now, it was satire and what have you, but considering the outcome, Trump was the primary focus of the video. He was the primary focus of the promo. And so, to me, that there was already a, there was already narrative in the energy circulating. And ultimately, the media did nobody any favors with any of those portrayals. Moreover, even during the primary season, and I watched this, well, I didn't watch it, but I read it, the New York Times treated Trump as a populist candidate while downplaying Bernie Sanders. They talked about the, quote, rise of Donald Trump, but did not talk similarly of Bernie Sanders. Trump was literally given, and this is what I'm talking about, free advertisement. I remember literally reading whole newspaper pages on Trump and Trumpism and what he's saying about the American psyche. The same was relatively rare for Bernie Sanders, even when he was doing well. I do remember a couple of really good articles that the New York Times printed out that were very tasteful. They actually, they pointed out a really huge problem that Clinton was having with young people, And it's funny because she overwhelmingly, she cleaned up when it came to young people in this election. It was the older people which went for Donald Trump. But he was still given this type of coverage, and he didn't have to pay for it. This didn't stop even after the Times endorsed Clinton into the summer. Trump was still getting free advertisement. Of course, now, at the same time, Clinton was getting free advertisement. But it was more important for him, because he was now getting free advertisement on traditionally liberal sites, which were pounding him on everything. He was getting free advertisement in traditionally what's called liberal media establishments, New York Times, Washington Post, yada, yada, yada. And he was getting free airtime on television. Why do you need to raise $500 billion if they're just going to give it to you? And that's exactly what they did. We were played. They have a, they had us looking. They had us looking one way, and they were directing us another. Plus, if you do not think it is coincidence that the FBI, along with WikiLeaks, attacked Clinton. So close to the election, I got a bridge to sell you. Julian Assange, if he was ever for the average person, has been compromised. And that's easy to say. He has been compromised. What he did, what his organization did to Hillary Clinton, without doing the same thing to Donald Trump, that's I don't have any respect for that. I have no respect for that. And then he gave an interview where he was touting Trump as the anti-establishment candidate. You know, if I believe truthfully that people were being cloned and replaced, I would have believed that he was cloned and replaced there. But I will tell you this before I close this section out. There is a dangerous cabal in this government, ladies and gentlemen. The FBI, I think, is part of that. And if if you thought things were bad now, you better be getting ready, because by the end of his first term, if he makes it through his first term, I want you to understand that, because Trump's not an idiot. He's a puppet, but he's not an idiot. He was put there to do the same thing that George W. Bush was put there to do. The only problem is, Trump actually has a record of saying that he believes and would support what people call progressive things. Trump's a puppet, though. He's always been a puppet. Why do you think he has the kind of money that he has? Yes, he's a smart businessman. Yeah, he's a smart businessman. Anyway, if he does not play the game they want him to play, if he wises up, sobers up, and says, you know something, I ain't doing what you want me to do. I want to do things the way I want to do it. Guess what's going to happen to him? I want you to understand, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I recorded an earlier version of this, which I might actually just release as an addendum because it was still good, but I pointed out the fact that Donald Trump still, this was prior to him or right after him having the meeting with President Obama. Donald Trump had the JFK talk when he went to the White House. Meaning what exactly? Meaning they, he was told, don't get too froggy. We will have no problem taking you out of here in a body bag. None. Remember that. He was told that. Obama was told that too. Actually, I was listening to, and I wish to the high heavens that I could find it. I was listening to a interview back in 2012, and I can't remember who it was with, but it was somebody who was familiar with the Obama transition team, and apparently knew some people on the transition team, and they were talking in the interview about the bank failures. Of course, that happened the year leading up to the 2008 election, and somebody from the transition team had told this man this. If Obama pressed on the issue of the banks, the CIA would consider, it would probably actually trigger a coup. They were told this as they were transitioning into the White House. Or should I say, he was told this as they were going through the process of transitioning into the White House. That means, ladies and gentlemen, before Barack Obama was even president of the United States, because don't forget, the economy went into meltdown prior to the election. Yeah, that skewed the electoral results towards Obama, by the way. They fixed it for him in 2008, now they fixed it for Trump. But that means prior to him being elected, there was a call made to his team, which he probably actually had to take. And they told him, listen, Mr. President-to-be, you press this issue, and what Hillary Clinton said in June about Bobby Kennedy will become true for you. Don't test us. So they had that conversation with him. And I think they had it with him again later on, too. When he started actually doing, like, the beer summit and stuff like that. They're like, hey, you ain't the president. Shut up. We tell you what to do. We tell you what to do. And they're going to have it with Mr. Trump, too. Because Mr. Trump is, he's a puppet. Everybody likes to talk about his business skill, but man, there is one thing that tells me the man has very little business skill. In 86, I think it was, he was part of a group of owners who owned, I think it was the USFL at the time. And they were a spring football league, and they did well in the spring. Incredibly well. And he was one of the few owners that pushed for them to go up against the NFL in the coming fall. Here's the problem. If their league had survived, which they didn't, that killed them. That killed the league. If their league had survived for 1 year, the NFL went on strike. And he should have been able to see that coming as a good businessman. If they had survived to that next year, it would have changed the dynamics of their league, because then they would have been the premier professional football league in the country. And who knows how that would have changed the NFL. But you got to understand, we have been played. We've been led here. What does that mean? I don't know. But Class War Battlefield Podcast will be back in the fold to talk with you about the issues, because there's going to be a lot of them, and we need to start preparing to handle those issues. I have another podcast which I'm going to be putting a lot more energy into, rather than Class War Battlefield Podcast, but I will still do this. I still love it. I still love you all. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, don't hesitate to hit me up. Peace, family. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and there are